Spirit Radio Podcasts.
It was an interesting intervention by the acting chief medical officer, Dr. Ronan Glynn, when he issued an open letter to parents and teachers reassuring them that the risks of sending children to school were outweighed by the benefits of being back in education. But is that his job, actually, to weigh up the medical and educational benefits? Maybe it's better argued that it's the job of a government minister or the Taoiseach. And how does the reopening of schools line up with what the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, said last week, that we're at a tipping point and could be facing another national lockdown? I'm confused, because looking at the figures on the government's own website, it seems the numbers of hospitalisations and deaths, thank God, are falling. And when we look to the evidence of other countries who've opened schools and done it successfully, take as one example the UK, who's had 0.01% of cases of COVID in their schools across the country, why are we not hearing this messaging? With me to give his thoughts on this discussion on the political messaging on COVID, I have Dr. David Thunder, lecturer and researcher in social and political philosophy at the University of Navarra in Spain. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, Wendy.
Well, what do you think in terms of just the kind of the narrative that we're hearing at the moment? Every day I look at the government's own website, their own data hub, which tells me about the number of cases that, and the numbers I look for is, I don't really look at the top line, I look at the numbers in hospital, the numbers in ICU, and the numbers of deaths. But that doesn't seem to be the focus of the government or the media.
That's correct. This reflects a general international trend, which is that many governments, as well as media, are constantly reporting the number of PCR test results that come out positive. And this is very problematic, because those PCR tests don't in fact directly detect disease or active infections. They detect viral particles, or particles of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which may or may not be active at the time of the test. And it's turning out that those tests, those cases, another factor is that the reason they're increasing is partly because of an expansion in the number of tests being conducted. The more tests you do, the more cases you uncover. But the really important data, which are not being sufficiently emphasized, are the hospital data, because hospital data actually tell us how many people are actually getting sick or getting seriously ill. And the hospital data suggests that the pandemic, the curve of the pandemic, the first wave of the pandemic, has already passed, and that we're in the tail end of the curve, where ICU admissions and deaths are actually very, very low across most of Europe.
What about those then who would argue, David, that, well, that's because we have been so strict, that's because we had our lockdowns, and we've really sacrificed so much, and that if we kind of move away from that, that the numbers could skyrocket again and we'll see more people in ICU and more deaths again?
Well, it's actually very unclear that the pandemic curve depends, there's any clear correlation between the curve, the shape of the curve, and the measures being applied, because different levels of lockdowns have been attempted in different countries. For example, some countries like Sweden never really had a proper lockdown. People did reduce their social contacts. But if you look at the actual curve in Sweden of deaths and hospitalizations, it's actually not all that different to other European countries. So there's a dynamic to this virus that really is not easily controlled, and it just seems to be like, as some epidemiologists have commented, it's like a tsunami that is sweeping across Europe, and we're desperately trying to put measures in place to slow it down. But the end result seems to be that it permeates the population and really moves its way through the population. All we can do is gradually slow it down, attempt to slow it down, but in fact it's going to reach an awful lot of us.
Do you think that's where the problem with the kind of mixed messaging has been? Because originally the messaging was about flattening the curve. We seem to have done that in terms of the serious cases and those who are in hospital, etc. But now there's an obsession with lowering the numbers. And when you have the health minister saying we're at risk of another lockdown here, and then you look at the numbers in hospital and you're saying, okay, well, there's six people in ICU today. What's going on? You can understand that people might be confused.
Yeah, I think people are confused. In part, I think it's very disingenuous to say that we're at the brink of another lockdown. If a lockdown was imposed, it would be a political decision. And frankly, it has very little to do with the actual level of disease on the ground, which is, as you say, very low. There's a very, very low level of hospitalization at the moment and death. So from my point of view, to even suggest another lockdown at this point is frankly reckless and is fear-mongering. And to attempt to impose a lockdown, given all of its costs in terms of unemployment, depression, untreated diseases, and so forth, I think would be irresponsible.
We're seeing actually today, front page of the Irish Times was talking about the number of cancer screening tests that in the first 6 months of the year there was only 100,000, and in 2019 there was 500,000. Who knows what the impact of all those missed screenings might be on our health system?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, some people say, well, we're not actually sure of the risks of lockdowns and so on. But the truth of the matter is, we're not entirely sure of the risks of a future COVID, a possible future COVID-19 wave or another pandemic wave. We're not even sure how big it's going to be. We're not sure how many people will be affected by it and so on. But there's one thing that we do know, and that is that we know that there are certain sections of the population that are very much more vulnerable to COVID-19 than other sections. And we should be really focusing in a targeted way on protecting those populations. And they are people who have serious underlying diseases, and people who are more elderly, so over 65, 70, particularly people who have underlying diseases, and people in care homes. We tragically are in a especially vulnerable group.
And as you say, it's kind of targeting the approach there. But then there is a personal responsibility element, David, isn't there? Because, you know, I might be out and about and working, but I have to be the one then to not decide not to be in close contact with, an elderly parent, for example. And do you think that we've got the message on the personal responsibility piece is so important if we are to get back to some sort of normality?
I personally think that we're dispersing. We have the messages too dispersed at the moment. I think a public health agency in this kind of situation has a responsibility to deliver a very clear and targeted message, and not to lead to any kind of information overload. People think that they're helping people when they wear masks. They may or may not. The science is actually quite mixed on that question. The message should be gotten across very clearly to people that they need to be careful about their interactions with vulnerable individuals. This means, in particular, not spending long periods of time in very close proximity to people who are elderly, particularly people who have underlying conditions or who are obese. I think that's an example. Another example of a targeted measure would be to say, which I think NPHET has suggested, is that elderly people either avoid public transport or only use public transport at off-peak times and avoid, being very close to other passengers on the trains or on the buses. Try to avoid public transport when they can and reduce their social network substantially. I think that these are certain very clear measures that could be taken besides hygiene, basic hygiene like washing your hands on a regular basis, which are proven methods of disease control.
What about the other methods that are being talked about at the moment here in Ireland, David? And there is kind of civil liberties groups concerned about it, where there might be extra powers put in place that, for example, the Gardaí might be able to knock on your door and see, hey, you've got more than six people there in your back garden having a gathering. Well, we're going to kick everybody out. Is that level of sanction impinging on our freedom?
Well, I think it potentially is impinging on our freedom to get more to get Gardaí. The more Gardaí are enforced, are involved in enforcement of public health measures, the more you create, first of all, a tension with public authority, between citizens of public authority, and secondly, a sense in which the Gardaí have to be looking out over our shoulders all the time. They have to be surveilling us, literally, to make sure that we're actually keeping these rules. I think that creates a very unhealthy dynamic in society, and it doesn't foster the idea of individual responsibility, which is so crucial for any kind of civil society. My understanding is they rolled back that a little bit, and they said that it's no longer a criminal offence to have more than six people in your house. It's now going to be a civil offence. I'm not entirely sure how they're going to enforce that. There are a lot of unanswered questions about what the enforcement measures and punishments are going to actually be.
Finally, just to ask you, David, you're obviously living and working in Spain. How does the Spanish experience compare to Ireland's and indeed other European countries just in terms of how they're tackling the coronavirus?
To be honest, I would say Spain is one of the examples of how not to deal with the COVID-19. I mean, from the very start, they were extremely slow to protect their care homes. They were extremely slow to purchase protective equipment and get it, make it available to the public and to hospitals in particular. And now, which is rather ironic, but right now, when we're in the tail of the pandemic and the worst of it has actually passed, now is when they're becoming very strict about, say, wearing the mask in the street and so on. And here you have to wear the mask at all times, even in the street. Basically, I think it's a big political show. It's a show of force. They're trying to say we're doing something about this virus, but it's a very scatterbrained kind of approach. It's not based on a highly targeted approach.
So who is getting it right then, David?
Well, to be honest, nobody has gotten it quite right. I personally think Sweden is the case. A lot of people look to Sweden. I think the philosophy that Sweden was trying to use in its approach, I think, is probably going to end up being the correct one, which is to have a certain level of tolerance for the virus moving through the healthy population, but then to apply strict measures of protection to care homes and other vulnerable groups. The problem with Sweden is that it's, as their own chief epidemiologist admitted himself, Anders Tegnell admitted, they really messed up as far as they're protecting their care homes. They didn't do that a good job of that. And that's one of the reasons why they had a relatively high death toll. Although their death toll was actually comparable to Ireland, if you correct for age, for population age. So they didn't actually do a lot worse than Ireland. The difference is that their economy took a much smaller hit than Ireland's. And their society is basically up and running, largely up and running and fairly normalized now. And they have very, very, very few deaths and very few ICU admissions in their hospitals.
David, thank you so much for joining us on the programme today and for your thoughts. That's Dr. David Thunder there, lecturer in social and political philosophy at the University of Navarra in Pamplona.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.